And we're your hosts. I'm Diane Bortoletto.
And I'm Monique Chicardo.
Let's do it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go F1 podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel, food, and lifestyle surrounding the sport. I'm Diane Bortoletto, your pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan, and today I'm in Perth in Western Australia.
And I'm Monique Chicardo, your post-Drive to Survive Formula One fan, and today I'm sitting in my cabin as we cruise out of Slano in Croatia.
Oh, how nice. I'm so jealous.
Oh, I'm not going to lie. We actually have the nicest cabin on this. It's a super yacht. It's right at the very front. So we've got windows in front of me, windows to the side here, and I can see the bow of the boat as we sail away. So it's very nice.
Oh, dreamy. How nice.
I know.
But before we kick off and talk about the Hungarian Grand Prix, big happy birthday for you last week, Monique.
Thank you very much. Thank you. My last one is as a childless woman.
Yeah, last one before you become a mum.
Yeah.
Wow, like your next birthday is going to look really different. I'm going to be sitting on a super yacht in Croatia.
Look, I still hope I'm sitting somewhere sunny and warm, but maybe not a super yacht. Yeah.
So you had a birthday last week. So did Fernando Alonso, 44 years old.
We're like 3 days apart.
Fernando Alonso started Formula One when he was 22. So half of his life has been in Formula One racing.
Wow. Wow.
Crazy, right?
Wow. That's brilliant. Good on him.
Yeah. Well, the Hungarian Grand Prix was, three words, Mon, describe the Hungarian Grand Prix.
Slow burn. Oh, no, that's too many words. Okay, hang on. Slow. Wiggly belly, because at the end, my belly was like, because of what was happening at the end of the race, it was like, I didn't know if it was baby somersaulting or if it was butterflies, because it was just, the race. Yes. So slow, but then belly butterflies would be, or wiggly belly. They're my three words, slow, wiggly belly. If you heard that out of context, that would make no sense. And your three words.
My three words are totally unexpected.
Yeah.
Good. Totally unexpected weekend is what I'm going to say to cover qualifying and the race.
I think so. It was, just now all the thoughts about the race and all the unexpected things. And yes, good. There's actually a lot to talk about. Here I was thinking like slow burn at the start, but no, there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, there really is. Well, let's just quickly start with the result, like in case you haven't watched the race. Well, I guess if you're listening to our podcast, you probably have watched the race and you probably do know the result by now. But,
yes.
It was win to Lando Norris. Oscar Piastri came in second and George Russell came in third. I did predict George coming in third, which
I
was,
know. And, well done.
And I got the top two round the wrong order.
Yeah.
You know, strategy played a role in that, talent or ability or anything.
Yeah. Well, of course, they did play a role, but strategy was basically what determined the outcome of the top two there. I predicted third would be Charles Leclerc, and he came in fourth. If the qualifying and the race had have turned out the way that they had have hoped it would have, we would have seen Charles Leclerc in the top three. It was a very... very interesting qualifying, very interesting race. Well, if we go back to qualifying, Charles Leclerc qualified in pole, in a Ferrari.
On pole, I know, right? Like,
yeah.
A Ferrari on pole position. It was like his first pole position of the season. Mm. It was a fantastic, unexpected. Even Charles himself was was completely surprised by the result. This was the tightest qualifying in Formula One history.
Yeah.
The difference is like, how do you even commentate? This is what I don't understand. And the commentators are like, oh, you know, he wasn't pushing as hard.
Lost some time there.
We're talking about hundredths of a second. So
I know, right?
So in the top six, less than 0.2 seconds separated the top six.
It's not even a time.
Just over half a second separated the top 10. Less than half a second separated the top 10. Let that sink in.
Oh, my God.
And less than 1 second separated the top, everyone, top 20. Less than 1 second. Like 1 second. If we just go
one thousand,
that's 1 second.
Yeah.
So that's just insane. The it's insane.
Yeah. And I, like, as you were saying, to hear the commentators be like, oh, you know, he wasn't pushing hard enough. Like, he lost some time. What time? Where? What time?
Exactly.
That is not time.
Exactly. It's crazy. So the Hungarian Grand Prix, the 40th Hungarian Grand Prix. So it's been on the calendar for a really long time. Really short circuit, just at just under 4.4 kilometres. 70 laps was this race, and round 14 of the Formula One Championship, and slight elevation, less than 35 metres in elevation across the circuit. And everybody thought it was going to be a two-stop strategy in the race. But before we jump into the race, I've just got to say, my cousin, Gabrielle Bortoletto, in the Kick Sauber 1T02, qualified career best in 7th and brought it home in 6th. Amazing.
Honestly, so proud of him. So hang on, how did we qualify? We had Charles Leclerc, we had Oscar Piastri, we had, was it George Russell and then Lando Norris?
No, Lando, George.
Lando and George.
Fernando in, yes. Then in 5th. Fernando in the Aston Martin, and then Lance Stroll, like, you know, for anybody saying he doesn't deserve a place in Formula One, he's daddy's son and that's it. I mean, eat your words, like, he qualified in 6th. So,
exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Amazing. And then Gabriel Bortoletto in 7th, and then Max Verstappen in 8th. Mm-hmm. So Gabriel Bortoletto, the rookie in the former tractor, no longer, you can't call that a tractor anymore,
mm-hmm.
qualified. Four-time world champion.
I know.
Max Verstappen. Then Liam Lawson in 9th in Racing Bulls, and Isaac Hadjar.
In Racing Bulls.
That's the top.
Yeah. And up until the very last flying lap, Lawson was actually ahead of Verstappen as well. So Verstappen had, surprisingly, a really, really crappy qualifying. Like, he was not happy with that car. On the contrary, Charles Leclerc was like, I think he was quoted as saying, I don't know what happened this weekend. Like, he was just so surprised.
And even before the weekend, he said that he didn't really like this circuit. It was his worst performing circuit in his career. Not this weekend. But his teammate, Lewis Hamilton, qualified in 12th. And, oh, boy, that post-race interview was hard to watch.
Isn't it? It's so upsetting when you see someone so dejected and so down and, like, lacking the confidence. I mean, this is Hamilton that we're talking about as well. Like, you can't diminish just how much that means for him to say that he thinks they need a new driver. Like,
yeah, that he's useless. You know, saying I'm useless. It's me. He was really beating up on himself. It was. Yeah, really, I actually felt really sorry for him. We don't like seeing a 7-time world champion, the greatest of all time, like that. And his race result, he started where he finished in 12th as well.
So he really didn't have a great weekend. But,
no.
I mean, I think in the grand scheme of this race, it was such a strategy race. It was two strategies pitted against each other, basically. And if you were on the wrong strategy, which was the two-stop, as you mentioned, they all thought it was going to be a two-stop. Some people risked it on the one-stop strategy, and they were the ones that came out on top. So if you were on the wrong strategy, which was the two-stopper, which Hamilton was on, your race was pretty much screwed because of that. Obviously, a one-stop strategy, you have less time spent in the pits, which is, you know, a good 25 seconds, basically, that you save on your race, which gives you track position. And, yeah, so if you're on that two-stop strategy, you really didn't have the best race, let's say.
It really favoured those drivers that could hang on, and namely, let's talk about
Lando Norris.
Lando Norris brought it home. He hung on. He told his crew, was it at the last minute? It sounded like it was at the last minute. It didn't sound like it was planned.
Yeah. The radio message was, like, when they asked him if he wanted to do the one stop, the radio message was, yeah, why not? That was his response, which you know, it sounds like a repeat of last week, basically, or the last race, where he was like, yeah, sure, let's try the one stop, which didn't work out for him last week. But this week, different story.
Yeah, it did. And Oscar Piastri obviously did have the two stop, as did Charles Leclerc, who was leading the whole race before his second pit stop. The Ferrari was flying, and I was thinking, this is why I'm wearing black today, actually. I'm mourning. Yeah, the missed opportunity, a Ferrari winning.
You're so Italian. I can't believe you don't have a black veil on, Di. A black lacy veil.
Just a missed opportunity by Ferrari. I don't know where it all fell apart. Like, the second pit stop, was it the timing? It just felt like he was losing time after that and stuck in traffic.
Yeah. Well, if you listen to his radio messages, there was one radio message that basically went off the screen because he was
fuming,
fairly giving it to his team. Yes. He was not happy. And the commentators seemed to think it was the setup of the car that he was complaining about, which it was working for him in the beginning, but then this performance fell away and something happened there and performance fell away. And he finished in fourth, which if he hadn't have lost all that performance, he probably would have finished second. But he lost all that performance. He got overtaken by Russell and he just could not get that back. He was pretty upset and pretty dejected. And he said on the radio for everyone to hear, we are going to lose this race. And they could have won the race. I don't know how to feel about this race. Again, it's giving me wheelie belly just thinking about it all, because I'm like, this could have been something so different.
Yeah, look, it could have been, but you know, I was super excited with qualifying and seeing just the mix of drivers, the two Aston Martins in the top, you know, six qualifying.
Bortoletto up there.
Exactly, Bortoletto up there, Ferrari on pole, Max Verstappen in eight, you know. So I was really excited for the race. And the race itself, I prefer the longer circuits, like the short circuits. The only overtaking opportunity was turn one. The other turns were really difficult for drivers to overtake.
Yes.
I mean, the good thing was that turn one came around very quickly, just a minute and 15 seconds or whatever.
Unless you're Max Verstappen. I mean, Max Verstappen overtook in the chicane about five times.
True. True.
And I mean, the commentators were saying, you know, that's a pretty audacious move. But do we know Max to be anything other than an audacious driver? No. So, of course, he's going to overtake in the chicane. On the radio, he got stuck behind, I think it was Alonso, forever, and he could not overtake. Oh, so they pitted him early and put him on the two-stop strategy, and it didn't work out. But his messages over the radio as well, he was like, this is going to be really hard. I don't think we're going to be able to do that. Like, there were a lot of dejected messages on the radio. Some people would have watched the race and been like, this is boring, because it would have just looked like lap after lap after lap. But if you're, you know, really, if you enjoy strategy races, it was a really good race to watch, because there was so much at play between the two different strategies that were running. And, you know, unfortunately for us as Australians and as Ferrari fans also, all of our drivers were on the not right strategy. So it was hard to watch.
At least Oscar finished this race. I mean, he caught Lando. So Oscar had the two-stop strategy.
Brilliant.
Yes, of course, when you have fresh tyres, you have more pace, but you lose 20 seconds.
Yeah.
You lose 20 seconds with a pit stop, and he caught Lando and came so close to overtaking him on a couple of occasions right towards the end, but just couldn't quite get there. And, you know, Oscar looked quite pleased after the race. He wasn't.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah, like, I feel like he thought, you know, I've done my very best with what
he could do.
We knew at the time, you know, he wasn't screwed over by the team. He didn't make any mistakes.
No.
So he did race a really solid race, as did Lando. Like, Lando did well to hang on and
absolutely
take the win.
And the pressure was coming hard, because Oscar was taking a good 0.7 of a second out of the gap each lap, sometimes even a second. So Oscar was a good 9 seconds behind by the time he'd overtaken Leclerc. And that was like with 20 laps to go. And he was flying. He said on the radio, he does not care. He doesn't want the strategy to beat Leclerc. That's not what he's worried about. He said his strategy is to beat Norris. So he was dead set focused on doing that. And you could see that he was, because he was taking a really good chunk out of that gap, or of the 9 second gap every lap. And by like the last 2 to 3 laps, he was in firing range of Lando.
Oh, yes. And
unfortunately, you could see the pressure get to him, which is very rare with Oscar Piastri.
I'm not agreeing with that. I just think he wasn't quite in the right position for the overtake on turn one at both those laps.
Yeah. See, I saw him under pressure, because he was making little mistakes there. He had a good snap coming out of that last turn onto the straight, which put him behind and meant that he didn't have, or he'd lost a little bit of time. So he was like 0.7, 0.8 seconds behind and couldn't get close enough to Lando to make that overtake. He took a very, very big risk in that lunge. He locked up on one of them. He went off a little bit on one of them. So he was pushing so hard that he was making these little mistakes. And whether or not that cost him the race, I'm going to say it probably did. But if he didn't push, then he wouldn't have won either. So, like, you know, it's like this. And all props to Lando, because we know what he can be like under pressure. He can kind of – he's like Jell-O under pressure. It just goes
– He can be, yeah. Yeah. See, I see Oscar's pushing. I don't see pushing as pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Also, too, because like I said, Oscar looked quite pleased after the race. So,
oh, he did.
So, yes.
So, just noting that Charles Leclerc did get a 5 second penalty and one penalty point on his license for his aggressive defense against George Russell, which we heard George on the radio saying that he was moving under braking, which, yeah, it was a pretty.
Yeah, that's right.
That's pretty. Bad move by Leclerc.
Good to see Kimi Antonelli as well have a better weekend and be in better spirit. He looked broken last week. He finished in 10th place. We should say Max Verstappen finished in 9th. Liam Lawson in 8th. Lance Stroll in 7th. Jesus. Amazing. Gabriel Bortoleto in 6th, as we mentioned. Fernando Alonso in 5th. And then, Charles, George, Oscar, and Lando. No Williams in the top 10.
Yeah, I was going to say Williams, Haas and Alpine had pretty terrible races.
Gasly finished 19th.
There we go. Gasly finished 19th. Colapinto was
18th.
Then Behrman had to retire the car due to damage. And, the Williams just didn't have a great weekend either, did they?
No. It feels like the little bit of magic that Williams had in the first – I don't know, 10 races this season, the fairy dusters just seem to have blown away. They've just not looked great. Maybe everybody else is improving.
Like, what? Where is Sauber come from? They're not even developing their car this year.
No, exactly.
Actually, a couple of other things that I saw this week that we probably should mention. We obviously had Max Verstappen kind of come out and say that he was staying with Red Bull next year, which as soon as I saw all of that kind of happening, all I could think about was us talking about, was it an ultimatum? Was Christian Horner leaving an ultimatum? Because it wasn't like there hasn't been, and like the dust hasn't even settled on that yet. And Max is already like, yeah, I'm staying. You know, so...
Yeah, and Max, came out and said, a lot of people are talking and the only people that should be talking haven't been talking, and that is me. And now I'm here to put the rumours to rest. Like, he could have done that 3-4 weeks ago, but he didn't. But, I think it was an ultimatum. I really think we know Jos Verstappen and Christian Horner are not mates. We know that. Jos has called for Christian Horner to be ousted from the team in the past. And I just love Nico Rosberg, who asked that question last week to Jos. He's just, so good. Oh, I've got to say, thank God the original Formula One song was back in the opening credits this week.
It was a blip in their decision making to do that. It was just a little like, oops, we screwed up. We're not going to do that again.
Oh,
thank
testing
God.
The waters, massive backlash.
It was like putting their toe in piranha infested waters. Why would you do that?
Exactly.
Don't do that.
Oh,
so stupid. The other good news is that Fred Vasseur has signed a contract up beyond 2026, I think it was. So that has put all those rumours about Fred Vasseur's leadership being in jeopardy as well. I mean, the drivers had come out in support of Fred and been like, no, what is all this talk about Fred leaving?
To be honest, I think that was rumours started by the Italian press, who always do this whenever Ferrari are not at the pointy end of the field. Like any football coach, you know, the press put pressure on the football coach to resign or be sacked if the team's not winning.
Yes.
And it's the same with Ferrari. My feeling is that there wasn't any real threat of Fred leaving Ferrari or his contract not being renewed. All that little chatter about Christian Horner maybe going to Ferrari, that's just nonsense. That never would have worked. Never would have worked. So,
could you imagine?
You know, yeah. Great news. As a Ferrari fan, I'm very happy to see Fred with a secure contract there for several years. As a Ferrari fan, I would like to see Lewis Hamilton be a little happier and get some better results. And if the team can just fix the car, so it is the way Lewis likes it to be, just do that, please. And let's get on with it.
It's across the board, though, isn't it? Because like the last few weeks, like I'm actually concerned about whether Leclerc is going to want to stay there as well, because he's been quite
vocal. No, he'll never leave.
You see?
No, I don't think so. Where would Charles Leclerc fit? What other team would he fit into?
Mercedes?
In your opinion?
He could go to Mercedes. I mean, I couldn't see him as a Red Bull driver.
Never.
And I could see him as a McLaren driver, but is it McLaren are going to change their lineup while they're this good? Like,
nah, never.
Maybe if their car's not absolutely dominating next year and, you know, the performance isn't as good as what we're seeing, then there might be some talk about changes. But at this point, they're not changing.
Both McLaren drivers have got long-term contracts. So I don't think there's any, and Zak Brown has come out multiple times saying he's got the best driver lineup on the grid. I don't think there's any risk, chance, opportunity of McLaren changing their drivers in the next year or even 2 years, even though they've got longer term contracts than that. We all know that if a team wants to get rid of a driver, they will. McLaren did it to Daniel Ricciardo. So, and silly season coming up. So we will just have to wait and see what happens during the silly season. I expect George Russell will probably be announced as staying with Mercedes. I can't really see any other movements. Maybe there'll be a Cadillac announcement during the silly season. And I'm thinking Valtteri Bottas will be one of the drivers. And I think maybe it'll be either Sergio Perez or a young up-and-comer. That's my feel.
Now that Verstappen has said that he's staying with Red Bull, unless he's throwing a massive red herring out there, then I can't really see too many other changes happening unless, you know, Alpine decides to stick to their guns and, you know, give Colapinto 5 races, then I can't see there being any changes. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But, yeah, I think
interesting.
I think Colapinto is going to be staying till the end of the year at least.
Mm. And there's been no noise about that, no myth of Jack Doohan coming back or them swapping seats. So I think you're right. I think Colapinto's there for the remainder of the season. So we've got a break coming up. I've got 3 weeks off racing. And during that time, we'll be bringing you some guest episodes. So stick around during the break. Let's talk about Budapest.
Oh, my God. Love it. Love the city. Have you been? Yes, you have, haven't you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, long, long, long time ago as a backpacker. Yeah.
Yeah. See, it's like everyone that I know that has been to Budapest has been like, oh, my God, I love it. And it's so interesting because I didn't know what to expect when I first went, to be honest. And when we were walking through the streets, like the main street of Budapest, we were like, well, I said to the tour guide that we were with, this feels like the Champs-Élysées in Paris. And he was like, yeah, it does. It's because it was designed by the same person. So the main street of Budapest feels very Parisian and it's so beautiful. I just get a really good vibe from Budapest. They've got the Danube, however you prefer to pronounce it. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. And it runs straight up the guts and it separates Budapest into Buda and Pest, which is how it gets its name. And so you, on one side, you've got kind of the newer area.
More modern.
And on the other, you've kind of got like the older town. And it's it is a really, really magical place. I don't know what you remember of it when you were backpacking. Was it a good place to backpack back then?
Oh my God. It was so, like you said, so beautiful and so cheap. And not many people spoke English back then. It was quite challenging. You know, you point, you use sign language, you rip open the Lonely Planet and point to something, you know, you figure it out. But I do, like, I remember all those, the beautiful architecture. I remember the Roman baths, and I had a really strange experience in the Roman baths because they have often, not all Roman baths in Budapest, but often they have like a women's section and a men's section, and people go in their birthday suit. There's no swimming costumes.
Oh, nudie.
And it was the first time I'd ever done anything like that. And I was with a Kiwi friend of mine actually at the time. And we kind of went into the bars a bit self-conscious. I mean, mind you, I was in my 20s. I should have just been flaunting it. But in the baths, which were, you know, full of mineral water and beautiful, nice and warm. And then we thought, Now what? We just looked around and all the Hungarians, they were just letting it all out. They were sitting, they were chatting with their friends.
Yep.
Might have been doing a little swim. It's just a social outing, really, for them. But they were, it was a very social.
That's what they use the baths for. And it's, it's cool.
It was cool. If you know, maybe a little confronting as a.
Well.
A young backpacker.
We went when we were there to the most famous of the baths, and I can't remember the name of it, unfortunately. But you see it in all the photos. It's like a pale yellow with like a domed roof on top, and it's very, very beautiful. And everyone wears swimming costumes there. It's mixed gender. So if you're not into the nudity thing, then go to this one. if you Google it.
Yeah, we went to that one as well. We went to two or three. I remember the beer being really cheap.
Oh, hell yeah.
Food being really, like, goulash, I think. I remember eating quite a lot.
With spatzel? Goulash with spatzel? The little noodles?
What, I don't remember that. No.
They're like little pastry noodles. Oh, my God, it's so good. Yeah. I think Hungarian food, you know, as Australians, we don't necessarily talk about or know much about Hungarian food. You know, it's Italian food, sure, we're well versed in that. We're well versed in Asian cuisines. We're well versed in, you know, Indian food. But Hungarian is still something that is a little less kind of, I guess, cooked or approached in Australia. So I think people can tend to get the wrong idea of what Hungarian food might be like. But it's damn good. We had some great meals there too. Yeah, I'm just trying to think if there was anything else that we did there. We went for a ride. I would suggest doing a bike tour because you get to experience like some of the suburbs a little bit further out and, you know, riding through the parks. It was just really beautiful.
It is a city full of lots of museums and galleries, the architecture, opera houses, things like that. The river, the Danube, is a, you know, a bit like the Seine in Paris.
In Paris?
A bit like... Yeah, the Tiber in Rome, the river runs through the center of the city.
And the architecture that you can see from doing a cruise. I mean, there's so many river cruises that you can do in Budapest, even just like a nighttime, you know, 1 hour or 2 hour cruise. And at night, it's one of the most popular things to do because all of the big, you know, the opera houses, the big castles, they all light up and it is stunning. So, it's a very popular touristy thing to do, but, you know, I wouldn't always normally recommend the popular touristy things to do, but I would definitely recommend doing that. It's just so beautiful to see.
Yeah. Was it busy with visitors when you were there? Tourists?
Yes and no, because it's a major port for a lot of the river cruisers. It does get busy, but we were there at the very end of October, so it's not the most popular time to travel, but it was so beautiful because the weather was crisp. We might have got a couple of like rainy days, but it was super crisp. And in the middle of the day, you could get away, like if you were walking around town or riding, you could get away with wearing just a t-shirt. So the weather was beautiful, and it was the perfect kind of weather to go to the baths in because it was so nice and warm in the water. And then if you're in the outside baths, you could get out and you could sit in the sun and be warmed by the sun without overheating. Nice. So, and if you did get a little bit warm, you just had cold beer. So it was really nice. Like it was, I think October is a really good time to kind of travel those landlocked countries of Europe where you're not by the coast, because when it's too hot, it's like going to Rome when it's stinking hot, right? It's just so unpleasant.
Oh God. Yeah. Just avoid Rome from the 1st of July till about the first week of September.
Exactly. I didn't cook this week because I couldn't, because I'm on a cruise.
But you're on a cruise, yeah.
Yes.
You know, knock on the door in the galley and say, excuse me, chef, I've got a podcast to prepare for. Can you get out of the way?
We did briefly mention goulash and spatzel. Mm-hmm. The Hungarian cuisine kind of has, I guess, crossovers with like all the countries around it. So German cuisine, you get like all these kind of, influences, I guess, from around the place. But I think goulash is probably one of the most known Hungarian dishes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, chicken and is it saffron? No, chicken and what is goulash? I'm trying to remember.
I think you can get beef as well. It's like, it's a stew, a casserole, a stew. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's delicious. So if anyone is interested.
Paprika. I think there's paprika a lot in their cooking.
Mm. Yes. A lot of paprika in their cooking. But if you're interested, or you know, you've never tried Hungarian cuisine, the goulash is probably the most known and approachable of all of it that you can kind of get into. So that is all that we have for this week. I've got to get myself ready to get out and explore Croatia. So we're going to love and leave you. And if you guys liked what you listened to or watched on YouTube, you can click like. You can leave a comment, you can rate and review. You can also find us on all your social media apps. We're on TikTok, Instagram, LinkedIn. I was about to say YouTube again. I do this every week, but we're on YouTube and on Facebook. So you can find us there, like, comment, interact, do whatever you like. You can also email us on andawaywego@gmail.com.
Thank you, Mon, and have the greatest time in Croatia. Like I said, I wish I was there with you guys. Once again, happy birthday for last week. Thank you, everybody, for listening and having us in your ears. Until next week, and until lights out.
It's lights out and away we go.
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Ciccato. Let's do it.